What's up, math freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of stabby goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show. My name is Jonathan McNeese. This is Mr. Chase Boatwright.
Greetings, hominids.
All right, guys. So, quick little disclaimer here. We are recording two podcasts back to back. So, if it makes it to air and it wasn't a total disaster, we did the live on Instagram and recorded it as a podcast. So you should have heard that last week. And because I'm going to be gone two weekends in a row to shows, we went ahead and recorded two podcasts back to back. So now we're doing this one. So I say that because we're not going to fake the, like, hey, how was your week kind of thing to keep this genuine and authentic here. So, but for those of you that maybe didn't hear the last one or whatever, we'll go ahead and say again, how are you doing, Chase?
I am making it. I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty excited about the next couple of weeks of stuff coming up. I know I'm going to be exhausted, but it should be a lot of fun. So,
Y'all going to be busy.
Yep. So just to kind of hash back over that in case, you know, not everybody maybe heard the last show. So we will be at, if you're hearing this now, we were at Blade Show West out in Utah last weekend, and we will be at Smoky Mountain Knife Works for their Fall Fest up in Pigeon Forge this weekend.
Tennessee.
So, yep, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee this weekend. So that, if you guys are out on that part of the country, then it's never a bad idea to take a trip to Smoky Mountain Knife Works anyway, if you're within reasonable driving distance. So if you haven't been in a while, or maybe it's a little bit of a farther trip than you typically want to make, this is a good excuse to come on out, because we're going to be there working the counter, and I know there's going to be I don't know who all else is coming, but reps from quite a few other companies will be there. Going to be a nice big fun shindig.
Shindig, I like it.
That's right.
Is that like a hootenanny or a hoedown?
I think it's somewhere in between.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, somewhere in between. This, you know, we'll see. I kind of depends on those guys. We're not running the show. I'm just going along for the ride, so we'll see. It might get all the way to hoedown category. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Fair enough. Either way, sounds like it'll be a fun time bouncing back and forth across the country.
That's right. Yeah, it should be. I think this one will be fun. So, since we're recording two back-to-back, we're going to try to keep today's a little shorter than normal, guys. So also just a heads up on that. So if you were looking for something a little longer, we apologize, but trying to squeeze two of them in on a weekend to record for the next couple of weeks is a bit much. So we're going to do the best we can here.
Yep.
But I believe we had at least a general topic in mind to chat a little bit back and forth with. So what were you thinking?
A couple of weeks ago, we were kind of bouncing around the idea of discussing trends and or fads in the knife industry, and just sort of the cyclical nature of them all, mostly.
Yeah.
And the sometimes things are not cyclical. You know, the bell-bottom pants of the knife industry sometimes come around, and not all things are cyclical like that, but just kind of a general discussion about different things that come and go as far as tastes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is. It's all just, you know, that's what the collective opinion is sort of saying at that time. Not necessarily that is the best or that is the, you know, anything like that. It's more so just an opinion of the time. And
Definitely, you know, not
any, it's a sign of the times.
Yeah. Indication of that it's any one is necessarily better than the other.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to claim, you know, JNCOs were any better than, you know, bell bottoms or anything like that. And nor will I claim skinny jeans were better than JNCOs. I didn't partake in any of them. So,
yeah. Yeah. I imagine that with knife collecting and stuff, and even knife making, it could be, you know, it might end up being some cases where you look back like I did. So my in high school, the big thing was, and I guess some of this differs maybe from parts of the country too or whatever, but like when I was in high school, you wouldn't be caught dead going to school without your pants legs being tight rolled at the bottom. So like, it wasn't, this was before skinny jeans. It wasn't skinny jeans, but the bottoms, I think what it was like our parents were the bell bottom generation. So
yep.
We had to go the exact opposite. We took our pants, our cuffs, and like tight rolled them to our ankles and looked like total idiots. And I'm talking about like just the cuffed up, like from like the 50s or 60s or whatever. I'm talking about like folded over. And those of you that were around then probably know what I'm talking about, but it's like folded up and like tight rolled at the bottom. So they were rolled, but they were rolled, you know, almost like elastic sweatpants at the bottom or whatever. So they were tight to your ankle. And looking back now, yeah, that was dumb, but goofy. But
you don't want to try to bring that back.
I don't know that I'm going to bring that back. I don't know. If it came back around, I might have to give it a whirl. But I still, I'm kind of in between now. Like I don't. This is totally off the knife topic, but hey, who cares? It's I've never liked like bell bottoms, but now I also don't like I want my pants. The bottom of my pants, the cuffs to kind of come down over my shoes good. Like now I'm like hyper paranoid about them, like riding up and like showing my ankles. I think because I've got like trauma over, you know, how goofy I looked back then or something. I don't know. But,
I mean, maybe I'm also kind of the same way. I can't stand it if they come up too high. Like when I sit down, if it's like half my calf showing, like I can't deal with that. But also I had some pants that were way too big for me, you know, being younger, and they were dragging up under my feet and stuff. And I also cannot stand that at all. So
yeah, there's definitely a happy medium there. So I'm so bad now about the tight. I don't even like sweatpants. Like I wear like track pants that have like a normal like taper at the bottom, but the ones that have like actual sweatpants that have like a tight cuff at the bottom, I just can't bring myself to wear them. Like
luckily by the time, I guess I was in high school and stuff, like most of the sweatpants that we got for like our football gear and stuff like that, they were all like the open bottom sweatpants and stuff.
Or like track pants is what I've always called them.
Yeah. Those are the only sweatpants I even own to this day.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, anyway, off of pants, I don't know why my mind was equating everything to pants for a little while.
Well, I mean, you do carry knives in your pants. So
this is true. You know? Yeah. I guess I was in the right vicinity.
Parlay it from there into knives. So what's a knife trend that you can think of that maybe has been around before and is kind of a little out of favor now that you feel like?
Well, I think it's sort of fallen out of favor. I'm not actually sure, but Ultim. Ultim was a big one for me that I just never understood. I didn't get it. I didn't care for the look. I didn't really care for the material as far as working with it or anything, and it hit hard and it hit fast, and then it kind of went away almost as fast. I don't see nearly as much of it as I used to.
I have not stopped and thought about that, but you're right. I hadn't really necessarily noticed that it had kind of gone by the wayside some. And look guys, when we're saying this stuff, number one, it doesn't mean we're knocking it, and number two, well, I mean, we may some. If I think something's dumb, I'll say it's dumb. But like, but it's also okay if you like it. Like, just because I think it's dumb doesn't mean that it's not okay if somebody else likes it. There's an ass for every seat, so they say. So, you know, indeed, there's somebody out there that likes everything. You know, anything you can do, somebody's gonna like it. So, that's one. I didn't necessarily dislike Ultim as far as the looks and stuff. I don't think I was ever really fully on board with like thinking it was as cool as everybody else seemed to think it was. I thought it was neat. But it was like, I mean, it's essentially a plastic. So it's like, okay, we're going this crazy over plastic handles when you kind of break it down. But
I think part of the marketing of it, with it being like, oh, it's a space age, you know, it's a NASA material meant for going into outer space and all that sort of stuff. That part of the marketing, trying to make it seem like it was better than it was, reminds me of those Ford commercials with their military grade aluminum, whatever, like, you know, that stuff just, I don't know. I didn't like the look of it to begin with. And then the way it was kind of being marketed and touted as better than it was irritating to me. But
yeah, and because for those of you that don't know, like when you say military grade, it sounds cool, but for those of you that don't know, military grade typically equals whatever the lowest bid was. That
cheapest,
like, they have to pass certain requirements, but military standards are typically very much swayed by like the lowest cost that they can get it for. So saying that it meets military standards is not the flex that you think it is. So
yeah, it's just one of those things that got into the zeitgeist of marketing, you know.
Yep.
Back in the day,
it sounds good.
I mean, it sounds good. It sounds cool, but you know, it's just, I mean, it's sort of in that same vein of like, oh, Navy SEALs carry our knives, and like, you know, people will use that as like a way to hang their hat on stuff. And but it's just saying military grade isn't quite the same thing as saying like, oh, an actual Navy SEAL carries this. Because wanted a better piece of equipment. That this isn't right. What they were issued. Like I've heard stories of Navy SEALs throwing away their issue knife like as soon as they get done with their training.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm sure. So. Yeah. But yeah, back to Ultim. Yeah, it was pretty cool. The only issue I really had with it was I don't know what I was doing wrong or what other people were doing right, but the couple of handles and stuff that we tried to do with it, like, I couldn't get them to not crack. Like, especially
we would have other people finally coming out with that same issue.
Yeah.
I think that's why this was on my mind.
It wasn't like, so much like when we were working with it, but like, say we would do like, we do fixed blade handles or something with it. And then when you would put the screws in to tighten it down, like to tighten it down to the normal specs that we would normally tighten it down to, when you tighten it down, the handle would start at the hole and it would crack. And so I was like, well, that doesn't really seem like something we should be making handles out of. If a little bit too much torque on the screws is going to crack the material, then maybe that's not the best choice, even if it does look cool. So,
yep.
So,
I had, you know, a little bit inside baseball knowledge with that issue going on with y'all. Like, I never really messed with it much myself because I just didn't like the look of it, but I knew you had some issues. A couple of the other makers I had talked to said they had some issues with it like that. And so I was like, no, that's not for me.
Yeah.
You got one you can particularly think of off the top of your head?
Yeah. And it's a really cool material. And I'm honestly not sure why it kind of dropped off, but Superconductor. Superconductor was like, back in when I was still making customs and stuff, like Superconductor was crazy hot. Like, I mean, everybody was putting Superconductor inlays, Superconductor this, Superconductor that, like, and I think part of it wasn't super, super readily available, which added to the allure of it, but like, and it's just a really cool material. Now, from a builder standpoint, a maker standpoint, is not the easiest thing to work with because it's mostly copper, and copper is really gummy, and it's not a lot of fun to work with. It likes to break drill bits and do all kinds of fun stuff, but, super cool material. Like, it's really cool. And if any of you are not familiar with it, look it up and check it out. It's basically like copper with, I don't know what the little wires that run through it, what were they made out of? Do you remember?
My brain is going to niobium, but I don't think that's right.
Yeah, it could be though. It's some kind of really conductive material. I should have researched it before we got on here and talking about it. But anyway, look it up. This, if you're not familiar with Superconductor, really cool material. But yeah, I feel like you still see it here and there, like on the custom knives or whatever, but not a lot. Not like, I mean, it was everywhere for a little while there. So yeah that one definitely kind of came and went.
I think I've saw 3 or 4 knives with Superconductor this week, and it was, you know, kind of out of the ordinary, like you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't seen it much in a while, and like I said, I've never used it myself, mostly because I don't even know where to get it. I think AMX, George at AMX carries it sometimes, but I never seem to want to pay for it, or never seem to find it when it's in stock.
It's not cheap.
No, it's not cheap.
Let me know if you decide you want to use some. And I can't remember the name. It wasn't George that I got it from. It was somebody else. I can't remember who I got it from, but I can figure it out if you get serious about wanting some.
Okay. Appreciate
to come back into style. I think I've still got a couple of pieces of it stashed back somewhere. I may have to break back out if it's coming back around already. So
Superconductor Machosaurus, yep. Rex.
Yep. So what else? What else can you think of?
One of the things we kind of, just a general trend that I've kind of seen throughout my time in the knife industry. And I'm sure the curve is even steeper since you've been in, but like you were talking with Witty last week on his live feed about how big, beefy, chunky folders were the thing when you started making folders. Like that was, you know, your folder basically had to be at least 3/16, you know, thick on the like blade thickness, for it to be cool. And now it's, you know, basically the race to how thin can we get it, like both in not only in the grind, because I mean, you know, a thin grind was important then as well, but like, you know, people trying to make basically like featherweight, like super thin, super light, like, you know, fillet knives or paring knives basically that you carry in your pocket all day.
Mm-hmm. More like gentlemen's folders that are, you know, and people, honestly, people more worried, and I'm not, this is definitely not a bad thing, but people more worried about like the cutting ability of it than they are the like being able to stand up to an apocalypse. Like that, because that's been a huge change, and it's influenced my stuff a lot, because, you know, like I said, I got into it when big beef, and that was some of the stuff that attracted me, was the really big beefy overbuilt stuff. And it's kind of crazy to see how far the pendulum has swung back the other direction now. Like, I mean, you know, when, like I said, that, I mean, now I did make some stuff that was thinner, but it was, you know, most of the stuff was probably at least 150, 160,000 thick. And then the bigger folders, it was more like, you know, 160, 170 up to on the F muck. It was full size quarter inch stuff, I think, on some of them. So, and just try like quarter inch stop pins on the F muck, like just 3/16 stop pins, I think, on a lot of the other like bigger full size folders. So like just overbuilt stuff that, and then I designed the Mac 2, and maybe I wasn't quite as up on what the trend was doing at the time, but I'm still kind of coming from that camp of overbuilt and beefy and rugged stuff. And then we came out with the Mac 2 with 150,000 thick blade, which I thought, like, I was like, yeah, that may be a little on the thin side. People may not, you know, this may be a mistake making it that thin. And immediately everybody was talking about what a beefy overbuilt folder it was and all this. And I'm like, oh, okay. You guys just don't know.
And I think that's why it sticks in my mind too, is like, you know, I was there to kind of see all this, you know, like, and
right,
you know, while you were going through that progression. And like, but I mean, I also think you chose a good thickness as far as like a, you know, good solid working knife, and for it to have a bit of hedging your bets for going for a more production side knife, I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
And at least from a manufacturer standpoint, there's a little bit of idiot insurance in some ways with a little bit thicker of a blade.
Don't want to be dealing with a bunch of broken blades coming back.
Yeah. And so like when you're going to a wider market, you're going to a, you know, much larger volume than, you know, 10 or 12 customs or, you know, whatever of X model, like, you know, it's, I think that probably was a wise choice in some ways, but, And also, you know, talking to Ernie a few weeks ago, you know, he was, when he first started, apparently everything was more that gentleman type. And then it, you know, went into that tactical era that him and a few others, you know, sort of started. And so it's sort of, you know, swinging back around to back like almost when Ernie started in some ways.
Yeah. I actually think that I feel like we're probably kind of in the middle ish of that trend, and that the bigger, beefier stuff is going to start coming back around within the not too distant future. Like, I think that's going to, it's going to start to shift back the other way some. Maybe with the caveat of, so with the big beefy stuff, now I would admit there was stuff I tried to make my stuff still have a really good thin working edge, but now there were knives out there at the time that were big and beefy and, you know, did not necessarily have the best geometry at the edge and stuff. They were
ground like a split wedge. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So I'm kind of in that, in the middle. Like, I want a knife that really slices well and stuff. And like, it's kind of crazy that it's taken, you know, it's basically taken about 5 years for us to finally, with the Dixon, and I've talked about it before, but the grinds that we're putting on them, to be able to get a grind like I actually wanted on there from the start. You know, you're limited sometimes by what you have the capability to do or have done. You know, when you're having knives ground and you're having to depend, you can only get them flat ground and stuff. And then, you know, that limits you some to what you can do with the geometry. And then when you're, you know, we toyed around with milling, doing the step milling and all that. That gives you a little bit more freedom in a way, but it's still a different, because
you still gotta, you know, consider work holding and how thin can you go without getting vibration and
right. It's different when you're doing that versus grinding a blade, because it brings in other issues inside the process, like you said, that can cause problems or whatever. So it's taken basically 5 years for us to get to the point where we can actually produce the blades, the bevels and the edges the way I want to. And it's really cool, but that allows you to blend. And I like where we're positioned with it. I like being kind of in the bigger, beefier, you know, you look at it and, you know, I kind of almost like that people look at them and doubt that they're going to cut good. And then they pick it up and they actually cut something with it and they're totally shocked by how well it cuts. Like, that's kind of right where I want to be. Like, I want it to be big and beefy enough to where it's like, okay, this thing can take on anything. But then when you go to actually use it, it's like, okay, it can actually also do pretty much anything. So
yeah, you don't want them to feel limited by, like, they don't want them to be scared of using it and stuff like that. And
right,
but, you know, then want it to actually perform very well when it goes into use. Like,
that's right,
sort of punching above its weight class, like you've mentioned that you as a company, or y'all as a company, are doing, but doing that in sort of a geometry aspect as well and presentation.
Yep. I agree. I think that's a good, for me, that's a good place to be. That's where I'm comfortable. You know, we may eventually do something that's like a really thin, you know, gentleman's type folder or whatever, but it's just,
Tangent.
For those of you that don't know, that was one of my custom models that was pretty popular. That might not be a bad idea. That would make a good one. Slim it down and see how slim and lightweight we could make it. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, and it has a narrow form factor anyway, so I think it would kind of translate well to that thinness and sliciness and all that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I think so. Yeah. Well, what other thing can you think? Well, I guess you mentioned that one. So something I might be a little off base on this one, and I'll admit I'm not the best judge of the trends and stuff, just because so often I have my head down concentrating on what we're doing and trying to perfect everything as much as possible. But I feel like
I will say that. Sorry, before you start, I did want to say that, like, it is way harder to keep your finger on the pulse of all these trends and stuff as an actual knife maker who's just trying to, get by every day and trying to, put boots to the ground and, get work done. It's a lot harder to keep track of all these trends than it was when I was, just a collector, just a college kid, being like, well, why doesn't this company do this? Or why doesn't this company just do that in that material or whatever? It's way harder than it looks. I will say that.
There's a lot more to it. And the bigger you get, the bigger the ship is, the harder it is to steer that ship and make changes and just randomly try new stuff or whatever. So there's a lot more involved, but yeah, so it's, and our time that we devote to, you know, our interest in knives is more devoted to how to make them better, that kind of stuff, more so than just perusing through what everybody else is doing, on, you know, which is good and bad. It's nice to just kind of be a spectator sometimes too. So it's just, you know, but anyway, so another one, I want to see what you think about, this one. I don't think it's like, it's definitely not like gone away, but I think it fell off a lot, and that's flippers, and particularly like traditional, like normal flipper tab flippers. I know front flippers came on the scene, and I still see a fair amount of them, but I feel like kind of flippers in general have, because they were everywhere for a while. Like, you know, basically if it wasn't a flipper, nobody wanted it. It felt like for several years there, but now I feel like it's kind of reversed, and like there's still some flippers, but you see way more holes and thumb studs and stuff than you do flippers. What do you think?
Very much so. The only exception to that, I would say, is in the sort of casual knife market. Just the guys walking around, you know, not really in the knife collecting scene, they tend to like flippers more, from what I've gathered. But definitely in the actual collecting scene, it seems like people moved away from flippers a good bit. And there's some people who just won't, they, you know, some makers who just don't make them at all, or, and you know, there's some collectors who just, if it has a flipper on it, they don't want it, basically.
Yeah.
I had that experience at Blade Show. It was one of my little Lavaca folders that's thumb stud and flipper, but he couldn't make himself pull the trigger because it had that flipper on it. He didn't want that. So,
yeah, I kind of had a hypothesis for what you said there, where you're talking about the casual people or whatever.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe the people in that category are not kind of just a little behind on all the trends, like the timeline. They're just running on a slower timeline. You see what I'm saying? So in other words, you know, 100%. They're just, they're not like, discovering the stuff as quick because they're not, you know, on the front line, so to speak, of all, what's the newest and greatest. And so it kind of trickles down. And by the time it gets to them, you know, they're maybe, you know, a year or two behind the trends of the serious collectors would probably be fair.
I definitely think it's that way. And, you know, it's like with anything, if there's, you know, some new word for cool comes out and the high school kids are all saying it, you know, by the time most of us adults start even understanding what it means, that word is already gone.
It's not cool anymore. And
it's no longer even cool to say. It's like a lag of the people in the know and the people not in the know.
Yeah. And a lag. That's, that's a good way to put it. Of course, also with stuff like that, if it's, you know, as soon as people our age, or well, my age particularly, start saying it, then the kids are going to, even if they were still using it, if they see somebody my age using that word, they're going to quit using it, because it can't be cool if somebody my age is saying it. So
that's, maybe we need to start doing that immediately. Like, have somebody on the front lines that gets this stuff out to us, and everybody starts saying it. That way it goes away immediately, because some of these words are stupid.
That might be a bad idea, because there's definitely some of them that I think need to go away immediately. But I think that's another one that's fair to say. And none of these are like dead. Like, you still see the stuff, but like definitely not in their heyday like they were before. So
for sure. I think, a lot of people sort of accredit the rise of the flipper to Kit Carson and CRKT when they came out with the M16 folder. And I think it was 1999. And that was sort of when like folders really started taking off. People were like, oh, you can open a knife that way. Never knew you could do that, you know? And it sort of became a big thing for a while. And I'm also wondering with like that in combination with sort of the overbuilt blades, the overbuilt, you know, knives, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
That may have a bit of correlation. Cause if you've got a big, heavy, chunky blade in there and you flip it out, like
it's
going to move like that. That pendulum is going to swing and it's going to make a big thwack, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of regardless of how good the D10 is or the geometry of the flipper is and a lot of that stuff. Like it, you know,
yeah.
Some of the motion, the weight of the blade itself will kind of help with that motion sometimes.
Right.
And that may have a bit of the correlation. I don't know.
Could. Yeah. It could.
Yeah. I don't know. I typically lean more towards thumb studs. I like to have both though. Especially nowadays, because if I'm preparing for blade show and I've been flipping knives for 36 days straight and my thumb is basically a chasm, you know, with a blister on top, it's nice to be able to use a flipper and, you know, not have to deal with that or, you know, a fixed blade and, you know, or whatever else. Like it's nice to have some options. Or if I cut myself on my thumb, which I often do, you know, it's nice to not have to constantly reopen that, but I like flippers. They're definitely, I would say, the number two option compared to studs or opening holes. But yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I like flippers too. I feel like thumb opening, whether it be a hole or a stud, comes a little more natural to me as far as like actually being able to get it out of my pocket, my hand kind of just fall naturally into the right position. Of course, some of that also may be due to the fact that I've been doing that since like the mid 90s. So, you know, a little bit of muscle memory built in there. So, it could just be that. But, yeah, to me, it just feels a little more natural. Flippers are super fun, though. Like, if the flipper's built right, like, they're a lot of fun. It's just, I think the thumb opening just feels more natural to me. Like, if you're going from straight from pulling the knife out of your pocket to opening it, you know, then it's, like, it's trying to do a little faster or whatever. And it obviously depends on what you practice, but like it just feels a little more natural to me.
Yeah.
Put your hand in a more natural position.
And so, I also think like, I don't know, some of the flipper tab geometry, kind of got a little wild there for a little while.
Yeah.
People putting really big or really weirdly shaped flippers on stuff. And, you know,
yeah,
you know, some of that stuff is probably contributed to it, but, you know, also that was probably a thing during the whole rise of it. So I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely, I would definitely say that's a trend that we're in the middle of right now. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. My bouncy house injury flared up on me.
So yeah.
Too fast.
Yeah.
What?
No, I'll just say, yeah, I think that the flippers are, yeah, definitely. Just like everything else we're talking about, they're not dead, but they're definitely not as popular as they were, you know, even 5 or 6 years ago, 7, 8 years ago. I'd say probably 7, 8, 9 years ago was kind of the peak for that, and then it's kind of tapered off some since then. So, yeah.
And you know, I front flippers sort of did the same thing, except they kind of went up real fast and then down real fast. It seemed. People wanted them, like they got real, real hot for a while and then they sort of cooled off rather fast, I think. But I still like front flippers as well. So, and there's a lot of guys that, you know, they want a regular flipper, a front flipper, a thumb stud, an opening hole. And, you know, if you can figure out a way to do it, bolt a thumb disc on there too. You know,
every possible deployment method you can come up with. Yeah. So
what, have you ever built any with thumb discs?
Side note. No, I don't think so. I feel like maybe I tried it one time, but I don't remember. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever built even one with a thumb disc.
It seems like a lot more trouble than it's worth to me.
Yeah, that's kind of where I fall with it too.
Yeah.
It's a cool concept. Milling and,
yeah. I haven't ever really been a huge fan of using them. Like me personally, I like the way they look, but just as a custom maker, I've, you know, having to mill the blade perfectly and, you know, for that disc to sit in there, but not have too much of a gap on either side. And then having to, you know, center a tapped hole into the spine of the blade, that just never seems like
you get one chance
to do, but
yeah,
you get one chance and, or you start over. Yeah. That's that's not a I mean, same thing with I guess, you know, a thumb stud hole in some respects, but it's not as arduous to place a thumb stud hole versus centering it.
There's not nearly as many.
Also, you know, centering it left to right, centering it back and forth in that milled space, you know, is, you know, it's got to be basically perfect for it to work. But I know a custom maker who hand makes stuff that does a lot of thumb discs, Blake Parthenay, I think is how you pronounce his last name. And he does great work, but,
I mean, Bob T's done them for forever.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, Emerson does them too. And I'm sure, I mean, you know, I don't know how he does them now, but you know, I'm sure that he did, has done tons of them by hand, you know, even if he doesn't now.
Yeah.
So
I never considered that operation as far as like from a machining perspective, because that means the blades have to be vertical at some point. And,
right. Yeah. It's a different like setup. If
vertically
you got,
and,
right.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea, but like I said, partially from a, you know, end user standpoint, it's just not my favorite way to open them. And also from the juice not being worth the squeeze on everything you've got to do to, you know, if it was definitely like far superior and I just really liked it as an opening method, it might be different, but
yeah,
it never felt worth it to me, like you said. But, so I got one that I've got a question about where you think we're at with it. Micarta
is king. Always will be.
Yeah. But so here's what I see. It was very popular, you know, back, I don't know, I guess maybe 90s, back when like Bob Loveless was using it a lot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then kind of when I came along, it felt like not a lot of people were using. Now, some of the guys, let me preface this. The guys that were still making like Loveless style knives and stuff like that, they never quit using it, right? But like on folders and stuff, like high end folders and stuff, it felt like that it was not something that was used a whole lot for a while there. It was almost like it was, you know, looked down on like it was the, you know, peasant material or something. And then it started coming back around, and then it's like, you know, everybody likes the what's old is new, you know. And so I can't tell now. I'm not sure. I feel like it's maybe kind of falling back off a little bit again. But
maybe I feel like it's hard to say, because now there's a lot of boutique micarta makers.
That's true.
Specialty, you know, blends, and you know, there's also always the, you know, the vintage stuff. At least, you know, talking about like the custom world, I see a lot more of like the really bright colors that weren't traditionally available from micarta due to the phenolic resin. So they're making micarta now with epoxy resin, so they're able to get brighter, more vibrant G10 like colors, basically. I don't know. You may be onto something there. I haven't really, I mean, I don't know what is supplanting it is the only thing. I haven't seen anything like a dominant new type of material, either G10 or, like, you know, anything like that kind of supplanting it. Carbon fiber hasn't really seemed to be as, you know, hot as it once was, because that was another one back in the day. Between, you know, silver twill and
silver twill was
carbon
fiber.
And,
yeah.
I remember you had some that had like dollar bills shredded up in it or something.
I don't remember what that was called or who made it, but it had like, it literally had money, dollar bills shredded up in it. It was pretty neat. I definitely don't think it, I kind of feel like now it's just kind of, I mean, there's those like the really unique stuff like that one, like that carbon fiber, but the, I kind of feel like right now it's just kind of a mixture between, you know, micarta, G10, carbon fiber, Richlite, Fordite,
Richlite has been getting a bump here lately, it seems.
Yeah. So, which of course I don't, part of the reason I ask is because I'm not doing stuff with those materials as much, you know, since we're not doing, currently haven't been doing a ton of fixed blades and stuff. And it's not really something that we're doing a lot of, other than some inlays and stuff for a while on the Mac 2s, like it's just not a material that we've been really using a lot. So as we ramp up our fixed blade stuff, which is coming pretty soon, I probably get a little better feel for that and see what people are requesting and stuff. So
that's also
going to be interesting.
It's kind of hard for me to judge because most of everything I do is micarta. So I don't really have it's not like, you know, I'm having G10 knives that are selling better than micarta knives that are selling better than carbon fiber or whatever. So, definitely could be, one of those things that's kind of maybe trending downward in this, you know, perpetual cycle. But on that sort of discussion, I think the whole reason we talk about trends and fads is what we're essentially trying to do is create something that's timeless, that, you know, will outlive us and still look good after we're, you know, in the dirt someday. And basically, like we've outlined throughout 45 minutes now, is it's very difficult, you know, when you're kind of caught up in the moment of, you know, what is hot right now, what looks good right now, you know, you can get kind of sucked into that and end up with a bell bottoms or a Jenko situation, or, you know, but, you know, you try to stay somewhere in the middle, like we talked about, and try to create something that will endure and still look good. You choose good color combinations and, you know, stuff like that, and try to make stuff contrast. And it's just a difficult thing. And I think that's sort of the whole ethos of this discussion, in a way, like sort of the underlying text of it all. What do you think?
Yeah. So number one, when you say that we're trying to make something timeless, if you're referring like you and I, that's pretty accurate. I definitely do not think that applies to all makers, designers, whatever you want to call it, because there's definitely some people out there that just want to throw, number one, whatever's the new, they just want something that's new, and they want to be like one of the first people to use some new material or some new whatever. And there's some people that just want to make it as flashy as they can and as, you know, wild as they can. You know, that's kind of their thing. And again, I'm not knocking any of this. It's just, you know, it's different takes on what you want to do. But for me and for you, like, you know, yes, I don't mind, you know, throwing some trendy stuff in there or whatever, but like, I still want stuff to be, I don't want it to be gaudy. I want it to be, you know, like you said, kind of timeless. I want it to be, you know, even if something's kind of not in style years from now, when somebody looks at it, from at least be able to look at it and be like, oh, that's, you know, that's cool. I mean, kind of like we do with some older cars now. It's not like there's lots of older model cars out there that I think are cool. It's not necessarily what I want to drive for a daily driver, but I can still look at them and appreciate, you know, that they're cool for their classic lines or their whatever, you know? So
yeah,
it's,
and some stuff is,
I think it's kind of that.
Yeah. And you know, I think some stuff kind of works in its era. Like I'm thinking like the 50s Chevrolet kind of greenish teal color. Like, I don't know if that would work on a modern car and it would look good, but it looks good on that car. And like, you know, there's certain things like that I think are sort of their time and they look good in their time. But you know, when you try to transcend that, it gets hairy real quick.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff comes and goes. Like I said, most stuff is cyclical. So I think this would be a really good episode to try to get a lot of good feedback on. Guys, we would love to hear what your thoughts are on trends and stuff. And to be totally honest, from a selfish standpoint, I would like to know, to help us, because like we said, we're not necessarily the foremost experts on the trends. Now, I've been around long enough to see a bunch of stuff come and go, but I also, like I said, I don't focus on it that much these days to necessarily know what all everybody is doing and buying and stuff. So really like to hear your guys' thoughts on what some other trends and stuff that you've seen, and whether it be materials or, you know, styles, whatever, and just kind of see what you guys come up with. Or you may disagree with us on some of the trends. Y'all may still think that, you know, Ultim is super hot and Flipper, an Ultim Flipper, whatever, you know,
quarter inch Ultimate Flipper with
quarter inch. Yeah. Might think it's the hottest thing ever. And we're not necessarily talking so much about, you know, like our personal taste factors into it, but more just what trends are coming and going. But I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that stuff. So please, comment and you can shoot us an email to the site and
knifefreakshow@gmail.com.
You go. knifefreakshow@gmail.com. And so we might end up making another episode out of this if we get enough feedback off of it and get some other people's opinions. So I think that would be really cool.
For sure. Did you have any other trends or fads you wanted to knock down or lift up or anything like that before we go?
Nothing that's really just coming to mind. I think we hit the biggest ones that are the most obvious to me. I'm sure there's tons of other ones that if somebody said it, I would be like, oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. But those are the top ones that come to mind for me.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Yep. I think we'll wrap it up, and guys, after this one, we'll try to get back on a regular schedule. Once some of my, show schedule shows down a little bit, but we appreciate you guys. Hope you keep listening. Please give us some feedback, like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and hope you have a great week.
Let your freak flag fly.